Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're in the final week of negotiations for the New York State budget, which will determine the fate of a lot of the issues we've been discussing on the show a lot: tax cuts, education spending, including funding for the universal pre-K and support for charter schools, public financing for elections as a clean campaigns measure, plus the recently defeated DREAM Act could show up again in this budget deal, helping children who were brought here illegally as immigrants to afford to go to college. And this is all taking place between what we'll call the four men in a room, which we'll explain if you don't know that term. And we will be counting down to the April 1st deadline day with a series of guests between now and then. Joining me today to talk about the process and what the end result might hold is New York State Senator and Democratic Conference Leader in the Senate, Andrea Stewart Cousins, who represents Yonkers and other parts of Westchester County. But remember, even though the Democrats hold the majority in the state Senate, she's not the leader in that room with the other three, thanks to the breakaway independent Democratic Conference led by Jeff Klein of the Bronx, which has formed this coalition with the state Senate Republicans. Confusing if you don't already know this history, but the actual majority Democrats are locked out of the leadership. So welcome back to the show, Leader Senator Stewart Cousins.
Thank you so much, Brian, and thank you for explaining some of the quote-unquote history to your listeners so well.
And to even clarify further, the four men in the room making doing most of this negotiating, the governor, Sheldon Silver, the assembly speaker, Dean Skelos, the Republican Senate leader, and Jeff Klein, the independent Democrats coalition or conference leader who formed that coalition with Skelos. Are you briefed by them on where negotiations stand as the leader of the regular Democrats, or call it what you will?
Well, I certainly do take every opportunity to get the information that our conference needs to push forward our agenda. I spoke with Senator Skelos yesterday very, very briefly. I certainly are in contact with the governor's people, and we have a constant communication with the speaker as well as their staff. So although I am not in the room, unfortunately, because, again, I represent the vast majority of the views of the people of New York, because, as you said, the people did indeed elect the Democratic majority to lead the Senate, though I am locked out of that, I certainly am able to access information and push, you know, our Democratic and progressive agenda through other means.
Now, one piece of news from the weekend was that the Republican Senate leader in that room, Dean Skelos of Long Island, stormed out on Friday, saying that New York City and Mayor de Blasio were getting too much in these negotiations versus the rest of the state. That might be news to the mayor. But was he referring to funding for universal pre-K, or do you know?
You know, it's really, I mean, I wasn't there. It's not clear. But, of course, there's always been this tension between upstate, downstate, and you know, I understand there's so much theater, and of course part of that theater was what you referred to as the DREAM Act failure, unfortunately. You know, there's a lot of theater that goes into the making of legislation and certainly the budget. So from what I understand, they were back not necessarily collectively in the room, but they were back separately. Senator Skelos and Klein with the governor at some point and Speaker Silver at another point. And, of course, there is great tension about how we're going to create a funding stream for UPK. And there is consensus, certainly in my conference, as well as on the assembly side, and I guess with the IDC, that there must be inclusion of funding for universal pre-K in the budget. And of course, the governor has said that, you know, as soon as you present a pre-K program, the state will fund it. So, you know, there has to be some commitment of a vast number of funds, and how that commitment is met. And we also obviously want it to be sustained, because you can't have somebody going to pre-K this year and then next year, oops, we don't have the funding for it. It's no longer a priority.
When it comes to funding universal pre-K, Should that be a state priority? It looks like that's where it's headed, and this debate is really over. But the court, as you know, mandated funding for K through 12 education a few years ago, and that is still far below the level of what the court said it should be to provide a decent, sound, basic education for all New Yorkers, especially in low-income areas.
Sure.
And there's a new lawsuit saying the state is $4 billion behind. So is this push for universal pre-K competing with basic funding for K through 12?
You know, you make a really valid point in terms of what's happened in the past regarding school funding and what's happening now. And I think that the reality is, and one of the reasons I ran was this whole idea that education to me and to many others has not really been the kind of priority that it should be. Funding, as far as I could see, many years past had been part of a political scenario as opposed to a good policy perspective. So in other words, if you were the leader of the Senate Republicans, more money would go out to Long Island, more money goes upstate. The assumption is that the assembly was managing the city, and you know, you just had to be connected somehow politically. That's not the way to educate people. It's not the way to assure our place in terms of this global economy. It's not fair to our children. So as far as universal pre-K is concerned, and we know certainly in terms of challenged socioeconomic school districts, kids who come in and are not prepared to learn, are not able to read, who don't have the access to vocabulary that some of their peers have, just don't do well. And that manifests itself in about the fourth grade, where right. Unfortunately people start looking at how many prisons to build when it looks at how many kids who are not really reaching the literacy rates they need to meet yeah. by the time they're in fourth grade. So right. I think UPK is important. I think everybody gets how critical it is to a continuum of education.
We have a few minutes. Let me tick off some of the items still, you know, in contention for being passed, and you give me what you think the status is. I see that you wrote an op-ed for the Journal News about the need for public financing of elections, something the governor wants to get through in this budget. And you said one of the reasons for it would be to elect more women. Now, Senate Republicans have been staunchly opposing public financing. What are its chances of passing this week?
I want to say it is good. I don't know, you know, again, I go back to the dynamics of this place. The Assembly wants campaign finance reform. Our Senate Democrats want campaign finance reform. The IDC says they want campaign finance reform. The governor wants campaign finance reform. So with that, you would think that we would get it. Unfortunately, that was the dynamic with minimum wage, and what we got was a watered-down minimum wage result. So I believe that you have some chance of seeing it, but because, again, the way this place has worked, it may not look like what we need it to look like, and it really, frankly, is critical in order to do a lot of things, including helping elect more women, which woefully in the Assembly is only 25%, in the Senate 18%, and we all know that New York State's population of women is about 51%.
Another one, tax cuts. Now, the Liberal Fiscal Policy Institute think tank issued a report on the governor's proposed budget, and from their perspective, took issue with the tax cuts, which it said would mainly benefit the wealthy while leaving funding for education and human services with steep cuts. Will your House, and do you think the Democratic-controlled Assembly, pass the governor's tax cuts?
I think, again, that will be something that will be negotiated and compromised. There's a lot of pushback about the tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, and the fact that we are having difficulty funding our school system, that you've got human service workers that haven't even been able to get a 2% cost of living adjustment for years, that you were closing down facilities that, serve people. I mean, there are a lot of so that is going to be a tough negotiation. I think everybody is looking at targeting the middle class for tax cuts. Everybody is trying to find a sensible way to help our municipalities, you know, meet their responsibilities under the tax cap, as well as do what they can to consolidate and to share services. So this will be a really tough negotiation. But at the end, I predict that the middle class taxpayers and renters will benefit.
How about the DREAM Act? The Senate narrowly defeated a state version of the DREAM Act, which we briefly mentioned before. And again, that would have offered college tuition assistance, regardless of immigration status. But it may come back as a budget item?
I would hope so. We had asked for it to be part of the Senate resolution that the majority coalition put forth, because we understood that it was already funded in the Assembly's document, that, again, the governor has said he would sign it and is a proponent. So if we also came forward and put it in our budget, this wouldn't even be a conversation. It was not in our One House proposal, and so they took it to the floor knowing, quite frankly, that the votes were not there. It's the coalition, the majority coalition, is supposed to have been a coalition that was going to bring bipartisan support for progressive issues such as the DREAM Act, and unfortunately that was not the case. I had 99% of my Democratic senators who are in my conference vote for the DREAM Act, and unfortunately the coalition produced no Republican support for the DREAM Act. Thereby, this bipartisanship was certainly not manifested in that, and the DREAM Act failed. So we are hoping that we're able to do what, again, everybody says they want to do, and, you know, give children who are here, as you know, rightfully said, with no fault of they're here, they've been educated, they are prepared to go forward and to really give back to the place that they know as home. And if we can help them, we ought to.
And one of the biggest arguments for the DREAM Act, no matter what people think about other immigration status questions, these are kids who were brought here and really have grown up as Americans and should, in many people's view, be treated as Americans under the law, considering that they made no choice to be here. And having grown up here, they grew up as Americans. But there is weak support for the DREAM Act revealed in a recent Siena College poll. And so I wonder if you think that's going to make it harder for Senate Republicans in a reelection year that this is to vote for it, because it would be going against the wishes of, you know, the values as they're perceived in their districts.
Well, obviously, they clearly didn't vote for it before the poll, so I can't see where the poll would make them more positive about the...
How about those two Democrats? Can they be the votes? You said 99% of your Democrats voted yes, but there were two Democrats, Simca Felder from Brooklyn and somebody from Rochester, I forget the senator's name.
Yeah.
O'Brien, is that his name?
Yes, that's his name, yes.
Can you bring them in?
Well, Simca Felder sits with the Republicans. He's never been in my conference, so he's actually part of the majority coalition. And, who knew what was happening? Again, that's part of what the majority coalition was supposed to do, because he sits with the Republicans. He votes with the Republicans, period. Senator O'Brien had made it clear at the beginning that this was not something that he was able to do. So that's why, I mean, it was already clear the number of votes that we had, and it was up to the majority coalition. Again, that's why you have a majority, because it is understood that when you bring things to the floor, you've counted the votes, and you should be bringing at least the majority of the votes, as has happened over the years, whether it's marriage equality, whether it's the SAFE Act. We realize that our Democratic conference, despite the fact that we've been denied our leadership, provides the lion's share of every progressive piece of legislation that gets to the floor. But it does not mean that there is no responsibility for the majority coalition to bring forward, you know, some members. And, you know, it just didn't happen. I mean, with all of our Democratic conference votes, even without some Republican or somebody from the coalition other than the numbers we had, it would have failed. So I think that we have to to be clear about what we're saying is progressive and what we're saying bipartisan coalitions can do, and frankly, what's in the best interest of the electorate when they send you here to put forward progressive ideals and they vote for a majority of people
right.
to rule. You know, there is an expectation.
And there is also now, and we're out of time, but there is also some reporting that Governor Cuomo is going to take a more active role in supporting the DREAM Act, and that might mean making some kind of deal or twisting some kind of arms on the Republican side to get those couple of votes. Just in 10 seconds, do you see that happening?
I think, I don't know. You know, I'm going to leave it as
All right.
I'm not
we're gonna
sure.
And we're going to have to leave it there with Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much. The Democratic conference leader in the New York State Senate. We'll continue to follow these budget negotiations to the April 1st deadline and see which of these issues resolves how.